So Jake, as I was sitting down today to write out kind of a set list, write out what I wanted to talk about on this episode of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, I started thinking about it. I realized most of what we're going to talk about is probably going to be women's wrestling. It's been a really interesting weekend and week in women's wrestling, considering the NXT Championship match, the reaction to the girls on Raw on Monday, all of that. It is super interesting, and there's so much to say. And I realized, Jake, one of the points that you and I will likely make at some point on the show is a lack of women's voices in wrestling. And Jake, do you know what neither of us possess?
A women's perspective on wrestling.
I was going to say a vagina, but both are true.
Fairly true, yes.
Yes. So I've recruited my number one vagina, also my number one mate in life. Anything? She's looking at me.
Yeah, you're
She's going to
losing
hit me.
points here.
I
went
don't
and
put that on a
asked.
shirt, whatever you do. You're number one.
I went ahead and asked Christy if she would, one, watch I should say the segments that Christy watched are the women's segment from Monday night and the Sasha versus Bayley match from NXT TakeOver, which I should add she did put up with me crying during again. But the Sasha, she has watched those.
You gotta post screenshots of her facial expressions compared to your streaming tears
compared to
at
me,
moments.
I think it would be interesting.
yes. Compared to me just like weeping during matches. That's not true. It's very quiet.
It's
Unless it's
quiet, but
the
it's
Connor
steady.
video package. It's not steady. It wasn't through the whole match. Anyways,
I
it
beg to
really
differ.
wasn't.
Yeah.
There were at least 10 minutes in the middle where my eyes were dry. But I thought it would be interesting to bring in a woman's voice on this show. So I guess I want to start actually by asking Christy. Christy, what are your just You've watched a fair amount of wrestling. You've seen women wrestle quite a bit. We talk about women and how they were used in the Attitude Era a lot on the Millennials with Attitude show. What is your impression of Sasha versus Bayley from the NXT TakeOver show?
It was amazing because I felt like they were fighting like men, but in a good way. In that they had stories that mattered. Every move mattered. There wasn't a wasted movement, and I didn't feel like they were preening in front of the camera. Like, what mattered was getting that championship or retaining that championship. And I thought that was really interesting, and not something I typically see a whole lot of.
And Jake, I guess same question to you. What were your thoughts watching the Sasha versus Bayley match on the TakeOver show on Saturday night?
Yeah, I had a lot of the same takeaways. I think. You know, what's been interesting to listen to, just hearing everybody else's perspective, as you know, we have the internet wrestling commentary barf that happens following every event, and nobody has been using the typical qualifying terms that they use to explain a good women's match. Usually, it's like, well, that was great for a women's wrestling match. People are talking about this like it was the best match on the show without any qualifiers. And I think that particularly stood out to me, you know, as one of the defining characteristics of the match. I mean, it was clearly rehearsed in the sense that they had practiced it a lot and they had worked out, you know, a lot of the transitions that seemed to be catching points for some of the NXT girls that have made their way up to the main roster, where, you know, we've talked about in previous weeks how, you know, they seem to be kind of struggling with the adjustment to calling their matches in the ring. But I think the TakeOver match was damn near perfect, and I couldn't have planned one out better myself.
I would agree with a lot of that. I find it hard to criticize a match for being rehearsed because I don't mind a match being rehearsed if it's good. If it excites a crowd, like if they are completely ignoring the crowd and they just go and do their thing and it's bad, then yeah, I would criticize it as over rehearsed. But when I see a match like what we saw that was, as you said, damn near perfect. I mean, if I were a star ratings guy, that would be five for me. That would be absolutely positively, that was perfect in my book. Even, you know, with what was possibly a botch on the reverse Hurricane Rana spot the first time, it's like, okay, things happen. Still, I still think they recovered from it well and recovered their story enough that I can't mark them down for it. I find it hard to criticize a match for being rehearsed when it's that good and when it can be that moving, that touching, when you see that 15,000 people are that invested in it in a building and millions of people watching at home can get that invested in it as well. It's hard to criticize it for being rehearsed because they're still responding to the crowd. They're taking their rehearsed match and adapting it to what that crowd is giving them, and they're finding a way to make it all work and tell their story the way that they wanted to. I loved it. Like, absolutely loved it. I've watched it a few times since I first watched it live on Saturday night while I was backstage working, and I literally cannot watch the match without crying at some point during it, which I suppose says a lot about me and also says a lot about the match itself. But it's something that I like. It brings something out that is really cool, and it's one of the reasons that I love wrestling is, at least in me, I know it can invoke that kind of emotion because I'm a sissy. It can actually bring that out. So now, the same thing, Christy, you watched the women's segments on Monday night, right? You watched the Miz TV segment and you saw the 6-woman tag, correct?
Yeah.
I will say, we're going to talk a lot about these two segments. It's unfair to compare a standard weekly TV segment with basically NXT's WrestleMania main event. Like, it is a little bit unfair to tell that, to compare those. So I will try to, I guess, ask questions in a way that reflects that reflects that disparity. So first off, I just want to know your general opinion of that segment. How did you feel watching it as a woman?
I hated it.
That's strong.
It's a strong feeling. I have lots of feelings. I think the complicated part, you know, they start out by saying, we're going to talk to these women, we're going to hear about them. And you think, great, you know, let's give them some time. Let's find out their stories. Let's find out what drives them, what pushes them. And they talk about being better and stronger and more agile. And then they talk about how they're not just petty. And another group of women comes out and they start calling each other girly, honey, sweetheart, I think was even thrown in there. And I feel like it went from something that could have been beneficial and could have made a strong statement about their characters and about what the story was, and instead it was just a bunch of chicks fighting each other.
Interesting. Jake, what did you think watching that women's segment on Monday night?
I didn't even particularly like the opening salvo. I thought the Miz came across as condescending the entire time, and I know he was supposed to because he's supposed to be the antagonist of the segment, but it came across like being especially mean in that instance, you know, where he was voicing the opinions of, you know, almost the detractors in the back who don't want to see what they're doing with the women's wrestling revolution, quote unquote. You know, they don't want it to succeed. I didn't think the women were written particularly well. Becky Lynch particularly, like they're trying to make her comic relief to a degree, and instead she just comes across like a spaz, and it's kind of an unwelcome departure from how well she was written on NXT. And I think the same goes for Charlotte, who appears to be just like a walking cliche about her dad, and I think that's totally one-dimensional. And I think Paige doing the Rosie the Riveter, you know, anything you can do, I can do better. It felt like it was written by a dude for Stephanie McMahon, who wants to do the boilerplate, we want to brand feminism stuff. And I'm not sure it's going to appeal to women who I think already kind of take those opinions as, you know, yeah, we know, you don't have to remind us every week. And I don't know if it's going to particularly appeal to wrestling fans who just want to see well-written stories, and whether it's, you know, men or women involved, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I think if you want to approach it like WWE's approaching it, they would need different people, because they're better off just sticking with the models if they want to do the boilerplate, let's brand feminism the WWE way, because I think they're, you know, people already have preconceptions and people have already seen a lot of what these women can do at NXT, and it was presented so much better that this just feels like a huge downgrade. And I think the crowd reflected that, and I think it was taken the wrong way by some of the women who later commented, you know, about, you know, how people aren't taking the Revolution seriously or whatever. But I think they're not taking the booking seriously, and that's where the disconnect is between you know, the women who are involved and the fans.
Yeah, I think if I can go a little bit more off of that, branching off of what you said about Charlotte, I think that as a woman, it's hard to get behind another woman who finds her identity in her father and not in herself, or who finds her identity in opposition rather than in herself. It's, you know, you grow up maybe thinking like, oh yeah, boys are stronger, my dad's the best thing in the world. But then you become a mature woman and perhaps a mature wrestling fan.
Or a mature professional wrestler.
Yeah. And you have to have your own identity if you're going to hope to be interesting. You can't just say, well, my dad wrestled, so I'm a big deal. Like, that doesn't fly. That's stupid and lame and dumb.
I think she's trying to walk a difficult line where she has to honor her dad's legacy because it's sort of this unavoidable...
Mm-hmm.
Monkey on her back that she can't just not acknowledge. And at the same time, they have these horrible cliches written for her, mm-hmm. that force her to, you know, go out there and do the woo thing, which, do you guys get the impression that it's forced? Like, it just really seems forced.
Oh yeah.
I don't think she doesn't woo well. Like, that's the funniest thing
about
it.
Well, and does she even want to?
She has the worst Ric Flair impression I've ever seen.
She's 50% him.
Like, she should have the best one. She grew up with him. He was wooing to her as a child. Like,
he seems to do it involuntarily now. Just
yeah.
Like,
he's like rocking the baby. Woo! The little baby.
Oh,
I'm convinced that, like, when she was in trouble and he would have to yell at her, like, don't you, whoa, my God, run into the street again, whoa! Like, I'm convinced that it was something like that.
What a frightening way to grow up. Like, that would be terrifying.
He gets really mad and starts elbow-dropping his jacket on the living room floor.
Oh, man. There was enough coke going around in the 80s. That's entirely possible.
Oh, it's probable. And that's how Jim Crockett Promotions went out of business.
Unreal. But I mean, just as a, and then, you know, when the Bellas came out, it just got worse. I mean, worse in a way that you wouldn't even have thought possible. Like, mm-hmm. they send them out there, and then it just becomes the same stuff that Kevin Eck was talking about in his blog, you know, ever so long ago, about how WWE doesn't see, you know, women as being anything but catty people who can't get along. And, yeah. And I think The Miz made that abundantly clear when he said his line about, oh, three beautiful women who get along. That's pretty uncommon, or, you know, something along those lines, where it's just like how, you know, you're insulting the intelligence of people that you're trying to bring into this Revolution. And the whole thing just got more counterproductive as it went along.
And I think the idea of that segment was Miz is supposed to be the voice of, I mean, the voice of the heel, like the bad guy wrestling fan, like the voice of the fans who would reject this, making them see how ridiculous it is. But Miz, he said a few things that were, I mean, as grossly offensive as they were said, they were also cogent points in that you all can't get along. And WWE stories have shown, if you look at the women that are WWE characters, they can't get along. They've proven that. And when you look at a lot of what WWE has presented for women and as has presented with women, it is they can't get along. They're catty bitches. They are just they're just kind of there. They, you know, they're going to whine and complain. And he also mentioned that they wrestle like girls. Which I thought was really interesting.
Or the teacher voice thing. Like,
yeah.
My hand goes up, your mouth goes shut.
He does do that to everyone. I'll say that. Like, that's a Miz gimmick.
But that was supposed to be a line that got heat, and the segment was so poorly written that the crowd just erupted for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it was the best thing in that segment, which is the sad thing.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, in the best case scenario, you're going to have women who do not get along fighting over a championship.
Yeah.
But the way that The Miz delivered his line, it was, these women can't get along because they are women, and that mm-hmm. is an inherent trait of the female, you know, part of
yes.
the man. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the stupidest way to you know, place that line in his promo.
And that's the most interesting thing about the hashtag Diva Revolution, is that it yes, I do have to call it that, Christy.
Okay.
It's a tick. I write it that way as well, because it's so, to me, it emphasizes that they are branding it in that way.
It's very deliberate.
The most interesting thing to me is that they aren't fighting over the title at all. And when you look at NXT, when you look at what they've managed to do, you had Stephanie McMahon delivering this big promo before the Sasha versus Becky match, and I think, or Sasha versus Bayley match, and I think seeming legitimately excited. Christy, you made the point too, as you were watching it. Like,
yeah, she seemed stoked. Yeah, she was like excited to have women doing awesome stuff, and you could see it. You could see like that little corner of a smile, and it made me a little bit excited to think that there might be something happening.
Yeah. Like, she seemed legitimately excited to introduce that match. And, you know, some people will roll their eyes and think she's glomming on. And it was a little self-aggrandizing. Mm-hmm. It was that. But that's kind of a family trait. And, yeah, a wrestling trait. But one of the interesting things that, or one of the things in that, Stephanie talked about how that, quote-unquote, Diva Revolution started in NXT. And you look, NXT didn't start by just saying, we're going to have a revolution. We're going to be different. They actually pretty much never stated that until they already were different. What they did was they built a division of women who are all fighting for a title. And no matter what, every match in that division has some sort of consequence regarding that title. I believe on tonight's NXT, you know, there's an Eva Marie match. There's that women's four-way that Emma wins. There's all of these matches that were taped before the show in Brooklyn, or before the live show in Brooklyn, and the thing that ties the entire women's division there together is that it is centered around the title, the way a main event men's division would be, like the way, you know, the WWE Championship division should be most of the time, and that is, I want that title, you're holding that title, I'm going to take that title. And that's kind of how wrestling should work for the most part. I mean, the stories can get more complicated than that. You can always bring in some melodrama. You can always have a ladder match for custody of a child if you need to. It's happened. Don't look at me like that. you can do those things, but in the end, it's about winning and losing, and it's about championships. And the true victory to me of the NXT women's division is there are women fighting for a title that means everything to them. The same way it is for the NXT Championship division, the same way it is for the WWE Championship division. And I just see that missing so much in the Divas Championship division. You know, when you look at what the women on the main roster are fighting for, Jake, can you explain to me in less than 100 words what the main roster women are fighting for?
I don't even know, so I don't even know how I explain it to you.
You're like, yeah, and like four words, I don't even know.
I guess the thing that you mentioned about Stephanie at the NXT show and her promo before the women's match, you know, it's interesting to me because it kind of displays the cognitive dissonance that takes place in creative a lot of the time, where I know they have separate teams doing NXT and then, you know, Raw and SmackDown, and you know, when they mix, it seems like you have this weird Triple H and Stephanie dual personality problem where they're entirely different when they're talking about NXT, because I think that is something that they are much more heavily involved in, and Vince is still calling the shots on the main roster, and so it has its own separate personality, and they still have to interface with that world pretty heavily, and so they have to, you know, they have to walk that weird line. And it's the way that they're presenting the Divas and the Divas division, you know, reminds me of the way Stephanie and her relationship with her dad works, where, you know, as far as the WWE is concerned, her title is chief branding officer. And so she has to view everything that happens in public on television inside the WWE as an opportunity to brand something. And I think she's taking that approach with the women's division. They're like, well, we're going to introduce these, you know, these three very popular women from NXT, and we're going to get out in front of it with branding, and it's just going to be this whole thing. And then in the execution of it, I think everything that made it great, all the sincerity, all of the effort that went into making them characters, it just gets lost because they want to make it into this slick package deal. And yet, you know, the person that encourages that growth in NXT and has this kind of grassroots view of how, you know, wrestlers are supposed to be developed, and, you know, Triple H and Stephanie seem to have the same vision in that regard. And then, you know, you make that transition up to the main roster, and all of that is essentially abandoned for the sake of impressing Vince. And you end up with these completely fake, transparently awful branding attempts that result in what we saw on Monday, which is something that is entirely confused, has multiple people with their hands in it, has no focus, and the people who are lost in the shuffle are the women who are supposed to be the focus of this, you know, new branding opportunity. And so I think that is probably the crux of the problem here, is you have, you know, these two worlds, and, you know, they're trying to bridge one successful product, you know, project into another one on the main roster. And because you have people like Vince and Kevin Dunn and the creative staff that gets in Vince's ear on the main roster, who are trying to, you know, in a lot of attempts, or, you know, in a lot of cases, sabotage those efforts because they don't want, you know, it brought to light their failures on the main roster, we end up with a muddled, shitty product. And I think, you know, the women who are punished by this, you know, Sasha and Becky and Charlotte and Paige especially, you know, they shouldn't be angry at fans. I think they've just been browbeaten by their employer into thinking that the fans are the problem, where, you know, they're really not. I mean, the fans just want to watch something great.
And it's interesting too to see, and you guys brought it up before, but to see what the women on the main roster wrote about the fans after that Brooklyn show. And I'll read off a few things right now. Brie Bella said on Instagram, so proud of my Foxy, at Alicia Fox on Instagram, but the Brooklyn crowd can kiss my ass. Nikki Bella said, where's my shorts? Haha, Team Bella rises. Oh, and WWE Brooklyn, shame on you for disrespecting women that put their bodies on the line for your entertainment. And for the ones that supported us, thank you. You make this worth working so hard and having this revolution. Paige said, you helped us create change and then did your best to disrespect. Nice job, because there were multiple B's in that tweet. And yeah, it's really fascinating to look at those and see the reaction from them. They don't, I guess it's something where us from the outside looking in, I feel like they're being set up to fail, and the women are being set up to be told, listen, we did everything we could to have a credible women's division. We had this whole branding movement. We had this revolution for you, and we tried to make it work, but it just didn't, and it's not what the fans want to see, so we're really sorry, but you're going to have to get breast implants to make the main roster again. I mean, I feel like the women are being set up to fail that spectacularly that things are, that's what they will be told eventually.
I hate to think that's possible, but
I'm of course taking it to a very extreme place.
It wouldn't be the first time that somebody was asked to modify themselves to succeed in WWE, that's for sure.
Yeah, it has definitely happened. Chrissy, your thoughts on the women's reaction to that crowd?
I think a lot of it has to do with probably the expectations that were set for them by the management team.
Yeah.
So I feel like the women were kind of set up improperly. Like, they were told, there's this awesome revolution happening in NXT. We can make the same thing happen over here. We're just going to carry it over. We're going to lay the groundwork for you. It's going to be awesome. You're going to get a great result from the fans. And the women believed them because, you know, believing your boss is a good thing. And the creative groundwork wasn't laid. And the stories weren't built. The stakes were not high or high enough, and the women not fully being privy to everything maybe that goes into this sort of thing, being so used to their WWE type of world, were probably hit with a really rude awakening that something wasn't quite right. And I think it's kind of natural for them to lash out against the fans, because the fans are what was manifesting that dissonance.
That's a really solid point, that backstage they might be getting told, you're doing really well, and you're creating a revolution, and, oh, you are so good, and you're doing this great thing, and you're perfect, and look at you guys, and feminism, and but the fans are seeing it as this is a hollow branding movement and not as this is the best thing ever and this is exactly what's happening on NXT. I think there's something to be said as well for the impatience of WWE here. They, in NXT, it took them 2-3 years of build to get to this point with Bayley. And you look, each one of these women as characters has had their big moments. They've had their triumphs, their faults, all of that. Each one of these women, the three they called up and Bayley, the four horsewomen, if you will, they've been on a journey in NXT, and they decided to call three of four up to the main roster all at once and say, look, now we're telling these stories here and it's a revolution and it's great, when they haven't put in the groundwork to tell those stories. And I think it goes back to something I was saying the night they were introduced, and that's introducing three of them at once is a terrible idea. Even if you divide it, if you took the introductions and introduced one every month for 3 months, or even every 2 weeks, you could at least make their character stand out as distinct and special. Right now, you just have nine women fighting over I don't know what, and it confuses fans, and they just go, oh, it's just the chicks. They fight. Yeah, now they fight for longer.
This is my beer break.
Yeah, and I do wonder, too, and Jake, you can give me your thoughts on this, because it's a thought I had while driving into work today. What if, instead of this weird Divas Revolution thing that they're doing, if they said, we're going to have an 8-woman tournament to crown a number one contender for Nikki Bella's Women's Championship, because she's beat everyone. So we're going to have an 8-woman tournament, and it's going to feature Naomi, Trinity, Sasha Banks, Alicia Fox, Brie Bella, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky. And they called up the three NXT divas as part of this tournament and branded them as something special throughout the tournament. And then the tournament was filled with solid matches, especially from the three NXT divas. And maybe in the finals you have a Sasha versus Becky match or something to say this is something new. And then you have Nikki Bella have a great match, either dropping the title or narrowly retaining the title, or however you want to tell that story, depending on what moment it is. But if you had done something like that, instead of having them just say, we're going to fight over who's more revolutionary, because revolutions are revolutioning in things.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to kind of put yourself through mentally as an exercise. Like, I think Christy's insight was valuable in the sense that it probably was a lot of, you know, being put into an echo chamber. I mean, I think if you're a WWE diva and you have, you know, a couple hundred thousand Twitter followers, and you can't possibly parse through all those opinions, and a lot of, you know, your opinion on what you're doing on screen comes from people inside of the organization and management, and you know, you see all these people at house shows that are just, you know, in love with what you're doing, and then, you know, you get in front of a crowd that, like in Brooklyn, where, you know, you're either going to sink or swim, and unfortunately, you know, on Monday they sank. It can be just heartbreaking, and a lot of the reaction that ended up going out on, you know, I think it was Instagram in the case of the Bellas, and an unfortunate tweet from Paige was just probably...
I should say, she actually deleted that tweet as well, yeah. So don't go and look for it, but you can find screenshots.
Right. It's, you know, a lot of that is just that, a reflection to that, where it's just like, man, I feel like I'm working so damn hard for this, and, you know, why can't you just appreciate it? And I think, you know, social media sort of encourages that ego echo chamber where, you know, you can just block out the people who criticize you and just promote the people that are with you, and you end up feeding your own ego to the point where you lose perspective on, you know, whether what you're doing or not is actually any good. And I think your tournament idea, you know, would have made a lot more sense in hindsight, you know, compared to what actually ended up happening. I think it's just, you know, a case of maybe the women who had these improper expectations set for themselves and maybe for fans because of, you know, just the information that they were working with, and then, you know, it gets tossed in your face that it wasn't really working, and it just gets repeated, you know, and you sort of relegate the, you know, the Reddits, Squared Circle people, and the internet wrestling fans and the critics into this category of the deep, dark internet that doesn't mean anything, and then all of a sudden it's right in your face. I think it could be frustrating and angering to the point where you might say something unfortunate. So I'm totally on board with that idea. I think the interesting thing going forward now will be fixing it. And
yes,
just based on what it happens on SmackDown, it seems like we're just getting more tag match stuff without a whole lot of character development, without anybody cutting a promo, you know, that's actually explaining, you know, their motivation. And I think that's really what people are desperately looking for. You know, it's just, can I just get some semblance of a character,
of a story,
some story to cling to? Like, you know, that's what made Sasha and Becky so wonderful, as their excellent video package prior to their match demonstrated perfectly, is that, you know, you couldn't have any more diametrically opposed characters in terms of, you know, what they value and their, you know, their reason for wanting to compete in WWE. It just felt like they were polar opposites. And I think what ends up happening with a lot of the main roster divas and the way that they're promoted is that they feel like they're just different versions of the same character, and they all share similar backstories and motivations. And I think that's the primary failing of this whole thing, is that we, you know, they immediately grouped them into clumps, and then they made the clumps all seem like they were alike. And you just end up with competing factions that have yet to define themselves as individuals. You know, what makes factions great, like the Four Horsemen or Degeneration X.
You mean the greatest faction in the history of the WWE, the Four Horsemen?
That never was in WWE.
Trademark Charlotte.
Yeah, when she said that, I was like, wait,
They were, okay, Charlotte. We'll just let that slide.
That was totally probably scripted for her. Like,
oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Some writer wrote
it. Nobody was ever going to say WCW ever again. But, I you know, what made those factions great to me is that they were absolutely phenomenal individual talents that came together for a common purpose. And here we had them thrown together as a group before we knew who they were as individuals, before we knew what they stood for.
And thrown together... And thrown together by someone outside the groups, like thrown together by someone else. Like it's as if a third
fans are supposed party to not stepped like, in. Who they're trained to dislike. So I think they had so much, you know, working against them in that regard. And then the creative just wasn't there to support them to make it any better. So how do you fix that going forward? Well, I think your tournament idea is great, and they probably have a decent opportunity to hit the reset button, you know, if somebody wins the championship from Nikki Bella at Night of Champions. It's just a matter of them actually coalescing behind that idea.
And it's so hard to get them to, if they're set on something and they just... It's a thing I feel like sometimes watching the women in WWE right now. Like, they are being told, you're doing great, go out there and do all you can, so they will fail. And that really makes me sad. One interesting thing I wanted to bring up, you mentioned how SmackDown seems like it's just another tag match, and it seems like we're just getting an endless barrage of tag matches. Listen to this. It's from Chris Harrington at Mookie Ganha on Twitter. Does great stuff with statistics and wrestling that is kind of... It's fascinating. In a way, the average women's tag match from September of 2012 to June 2015 outside of NXT was 4 minutes, inside of NXT was 6 minutes. So the average women's tag match in July and August of 2015 on the WWE main roster, 11 and a half minutes, almost twice as long as even the NXT women's tag matches were. It's not time. Like, time is not the issue. It's not that they all need more time. It's that they need good stories to tell. And I look, and this is an issue with all of WWE's roster. So maybe, just maybe, it's right that we're complaining about this, because these are women basically perpetually slotted in a mid-card spot on WWE's main roster, not getting a quality story, just like the rest of the mid-card in WWE. Maybe this is actually the best we could hope for, but it's that it's not time, it's stories. It's that they need to be telling credible, cogent stories. And I don't see those happening. I don't see... I look at the... I could have looked at the NXT roster a year ago and said, I think Sasha versus Bayley is the money match. I think Sasha versus Bayley is where it's at. I think that's going to be the best thing. I could have looked at the roster a year ago. I know I did look at the roster 6 months ago and think that. Like, you just... You can see these things coming when they're that good and they're that well laid out. So I look at the WWE women's roster right now, and other than saying, I know Charlotte and Sasha can have a damn good match together with their eyes closed, I don't know what to say. You know, I don't know what the big thing is, other than that I know they are great in the ring together. There's not even a natural conflict between them yet, but I know they are great together, and that... I guess that's what concerns me, is I don't see that story down the road. I don't see that coming. And until I do, I'm going to be really nervous about this. Jake, you brought up an interesting point, too, about it being a lot of men writing for them. And I, like I said at the top of the show, I think WWE needs women's voices to tell women's stories. I'm not saying they have to be the only writers on them. I'm saying that WWE should probably have a woman in there, maybe at least saying... yeah, that works, or yeah, that doesn't, or something concerning these stories. Christy, what do you think about all of this that we've tossed out there?
Well, the whole women writer thing, I think that's really important, because I think that if you throw a female in that room, she's going to be able to point out the things that are being done to marginalize the women, even if it's subtle, even if it's not intentional. I think that we're just more sensitive to it, you know, sometimes oversensitive to it. And I think that might be a nice evening of the scales, even if it's just one lady writer. I think also she could find more interesting ways to build up those female friendships. I think there's a lot of wrestling built on friendships and oppositions. And if you want to bring a group of women together, you know, three or four of them, there has to be a good reason. There has to be a link. And has to be something strong, because otherwise, why would they fight together? And I think that perhaps a female perspective could bring more to that. I would like to see that. I would actually probably watch wrestling more frequently, out of curiosity to see just what kind of stories they'd be telling that would be different than we get in the ring, we fight, we call each other names, and we get out of the ring.
Christy, would you say if women's wrestling was full-time always... I mean, granted, again, we were watching the climax of a story, but right. It was more like Sasha versus Bayley was more was approached with that kind of gravitas, with that seriousness, with that I guess that reverence that people paid it, the same way they would a, you know, a Brock Lesnar match or a John Cena match or something like that. Would you be more inclined to watch wrestling if they were presenting women that way all the time, if every show was?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for having dynamic female characters. They're enthralling. They're just as interesting as the guys, and very, for me, more easy to identify with.
Yeah.
And so the thing that I kept, like, realizing as I'm watching this match, and it was the Bayley match, and realizing how invested I was. Like, at one point, I yelled, and I don't yell during wrestling. I yell during football.
Which but is more worth yelling about.
It is. But I found it really interesting and really enthralling, because I thought, that is so awesome. She's like me. And I know I'm a grown woman. Like, I get that.
She is from your hometown.
She is from my hometown. She's probably about the same age as I am. But
you guys could have been best friends.
We could have been. Yeah. We probably were.
What?
Yeah.
Don't lie to me.
I know. But... you know, there's something to be said for feeling like you can really relate to someone who's out there, like whether she's the lovable loser, which Will and I have discussed the merits of the lovable loser as a character, or even if she's the boss, just thinking like, if I was more athletic, I could be there. Like, I'm invested in that because I relate to that. That's almost real life. It's just a little bit heightened. I think that's super awesome.
Yeah. I compare it a lot to struggles that, you know, women have in other forms of entertainment and media. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, you know, is directly comparable to Hollywood. Or Will and I were tweeting back and forth the other day, and I mentioned Gail Simone. I don't know if either of you are familiar with who she is or what she did, but she was a fan of comic books, and she started a blog in response to an especially offensive one where... do you know who the Green Lantern is, the character in DC?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. So the girlfriend of the Green Lantern, in a very at the climax of a very popular storyline, was murdered and stuffed into a refrigerator.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
And Gail Simone started a blog called Women in Refrigerators, which was primarily to a critique on comic books that use women simply as tools to tell stories about men in fiction. And she later became a very storied comic book writer after making contacts in that industry through becoming a successful critic. And so I think it would be important for more women to get involved in what Will and I do, as much as it would be important for women to ascend to the WWE and become writers. Because I think if there were more women who were making cogent arguments about why this is stupid and why they would be more inclined to watch the program if stories were written with a better and more complete perspective. And because that's what stuck out to me, and that's why I made the point on Monday, was that whole segment with Becky and Charlotte and Paige and The Miz and The Bellas felt like something written by men that was the embodiment of how they think catty women behave.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it seemed to be completely disconnected from how women in my own life behave. I've never met a woman who behaved anything like the way The Bellas or the other women are portrayed on WWE television regularly. And it's really only found in reality television and other places that's primarily a male written and developed business. And so that's what prompted me to make the point. And I think it'll be important, if we get better and more well-written criticism that comes from a female perspective. And hopefully eventually that leads to WWE taking notice and hiring a woman or two to fill out some of their storyline problems, because I think that the entire WWE universe could benefit from that, not only for what they do with women's wrestlers, but other female characters that become tools to tell stories about male wrestlers. Because I think
like Lana and Summer Rae,
they're treated in a lot of ways even more poorly than the Divas are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was listening to the podcast the other day where they're interviewing a bunch of women screenwriters who have their own podcast called Chicks Who Script. And they kind of have addressed that whole writing female characters as more than just supports for men. And also just including more female characters within stories. We see a lot of background characters who are men for no particularly good reason. Just then that's kind of what we're used to. And they made a really interesting point of, someone had asked them, how do you write an interesting female character? And they said, you write a male character and you put a female's name on it. They're the same thing. Like, you just have to give her more credit. You have to give her the story you would give to a male character. And she's interesting. And I think that would be something super exciting to see. I think you'd see a lot less of the arm candy.
Yeah.
And a lot less of the trophy type females in the ring, and that's cool.
And I think something like that, the Bayley victory on Saturday directly parallels the Sami Zayn victory in December over Adrian Neville. Like it's almost the exact same story. Sami, beat all the people who would beat him on his way to finally beating Neville, and it's the same thing that Bayley did. And I'm not even going to mock them or get mad about the lack of originality, because it fell into their lap with two very similar characters peaking at the same time. But the thing is, they didn't blink. They didn't tell Bayley's story different because she's a woman. They told basically the exact same story with Sami Zayn that they did with Bayley. And it's tremendous because it was just as emotionally effective, if not more so, because I would say Bailey is as much as I love Sami Zayn, and I mean, I love Sami Zayn. This is well documented. As much as I love Sami, Bailey is a far better character than Sami Zayn. Bailey is more relatable. Bailey is better written. Bailey is more consistent. Bailey has a lot more to her than the Sami Zayn character does, because she has a better history than Sami. And I will say that that's something that it's like you can get invested in. And it is. It's writing the same story you would write for a man for the women. And maybe that's my main issue with what WWE is doing, is you would never see them introduce three women in factions assigned by a random person outside of their feud, or you would never see them introduce three men in factions assigned by some authority figure outside of their feud and ask them to then feud with each other without a story and without a goal in mind. Like, there were a lot of perpetual motion devices in WWE. There are a lot of things that just happen and they keep going and going and going forever, but that's not one of them. You would never see a man written that way. And until the girls are written at least as well as Ryback, I'm going to have an issue with it.
A low bar.
Feed him more.
Feed me.
Yeah. I mean, he at least has a motivation. Like, Ryback comes out and I know what the hell he wants. Right, Jake?
Yeah, he does the positivity thing, but I mean, his character is like 90% me dead. Like, that's the only thing he's got going.
Yeah, like, until the women are written at least that well. And I'm not saying they should be two-dimensional characters. No, I want everyone in wrestling to be a three-dimensional character. I want wrestling to be a deep storytelling universe that engages me on multiple levels. And I don't mean the meta story behind wrestling that obviously engages people listening to this, that engages me, that engages you, Jake. I mean just the story they're telling in general. Christy, as we kind of wrap up this discussion, do you have any closing thoughts on really just the whole thing with women in wrestling and the current presentation of them?
Yeah, I think the other main thing that I've always noticed and been sensitive to is that that women are hyper-sexualized in WWE for the most part. A lot of their moves, a lot of their holds especially, are featuring the TNA. You know, it's kind of about like this hot lesbian hug, and it's a fantasy. And I didn't see any of that in Bailey versus Sasha. And it was remarkably refreshing because it didn't distract. I think that heightened sexuality distracts a lot from a match. And it's not to say that women and men can't be sexual beings and that maybe a snippet of that can't come out in the ring. But ultimately, it should be about the athletics and about your muscles and your prowess and your ability. And so I was really refreshed and really amazed to be able to watch a match without that. Although, to be completely honest and to give it its due credit, the tag team match did not have so much of that. The women did strut out a little bit more sexually than in Sasha Bailey.
That could also be the characters.
That can also be the characters. It can also be the hips that they have. You know, some of them, they have the hips that do not lie. But even to the way that women typically enter the ring, you see a lot of splits. You see, like, tossing their hair back. There's a lot of preening that happens. And I just really liked that wasn't really going on in the Sasha Bailey match. There was still some preening, but it was more of, it was authority. It was confidence. It wasn't.
Because she's a boss.
It's because she's a boss.
A legit boss.
Not because she's a bitch.
Yes.
I think that goes back to a lot of the male writing and the targeted audience. I think WWE targets men with the divas to an extent, and maybe to a large extent. And so the women end up doing what they think men find sexy instead of what actually makes women feel sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes this weird, like, preening affair instead of just, you know, projecting confidence in self-worth and the kind of things that, you know, you would associate with feeling sexy or you know, feminist, you know, versions of that term. So I think that goes back to them just, you know, having Vince McMahon and people who believe in what he does about women running the show. I don't think we get nearly as much of that in NXT, whether it's from the characters or you know, or from just the women in general in the matches. There's not nearly as many of the hot lesbian hugs, as you put it, in NXT on a weekly basis as we see on the main roster.
Yeah, and it's kind of fascinating as you watch that transition happen, and you see it basically complete in NXT, where now the women who are brought in who are perceived to have been brought in for their looks or perceived to have been brought in as former models, the women like Dana Brooke and Eva Marie are actually being rejected by the audience, who are being told, you know, you aren't good enough to be here, you need to get out until you can wrestle. And, mm-hmm. and you're seeing that struggle happen as well, where now fans are rejecting the developmental projects and developmental because they seem too much like models. And it's hard to deny that when you look in the best women's wrestling you're going to see in America is at least in mainstream wrestling in America is happening in NXT and WWE's developmental brand. I think it's funny. I was watching Total Divas this morning, like I do.
I love that show.
Oh, it's so good.
So good.
Yeah. It's the best. And Natty had this big dramatic moment where Mark Carano had explained to her that, oh, they might want to renegotiate her contract and send her down to NXT to help train women and to help, you know, the newer girls get better. And Natty was like crying because she's like, oh no, but I'm a diva. I'm not too old. I should be here. And I'm thinking, screw it. Go down to NXT.
Seriously,
I want to watch Natty
cool
have these matches.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look,
she could teach those girls so much.
And she's already shown, like, she led Charlotte through an amazing match about a year ago mm-hmm. on an NXT takeover show. And it's like, I'll watch Natty down in NXT all day long. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So it's just funny when the developmental brand is the big league for one gender and the kind of minor league for another. And hopefully that changes. I mean, we're talking about this at the very beginning of WWE trying to change things and trying to change how they present women. And I think it's hard when you have, when the main voice making decisions in storytelling is a 70-year-old man who is borderline senile, like who can't remember anything from one week to the next, who has issues like that. It's like, okay, I kind of get why you're presenting women so poorly then, because you're having these issues. So I think and hope and pray that 6 months from now, we're saying, holy crap, that Sasha Banks versus Nikki Bella match was so freaking good. And we're praising something like that. And we're talking about the women on the main roster getting a legit shot at being as good as we know they can be. Jake, any thoughts from you to close us out today?
Man, I think we covered it backwards and forwards. So I think I've said my piece.
Beautiful. I guess I'll ask, Jake, I ask you every week, what's making you happy in wrestling this week?
Oh, I am going to go with not having to watch as much wrestling. Like, I feel like I've been doing, like, with the G1 and with SummerSlam and NXT and Raw, like, back to back to back.
It's
I'm
insane.
Looking forward to getting on a more limited wrestling schedule and claiming some of my life back.
Mine's almost the exact opposite of that.
Well, you're doing
BOLA. I'm going to... Yeah, I'm going to BOLA, to PWG's Battle of Los Angeles this weekend. So I'm going to a wrestling show Friday night, Saturday night, and on Sunday. And let me tell you about BOLA for a second. It's August, and it's getting up around 95 to 100 degrees in Reseda, California. The American Legion Hall that Pro Wrestling Guerrilla runs does not have decent air conditioning, and half the time it's turned off even when it's 100 degrees outside. So I'm going to be crammed into the American Legion Hall in Reseda, California with 500 sweaty humans, men, women, some people in between, we are all going to watch some fine, amazing professional wrestling over Friday, Saturday,
and
Sunday.
Is this like a pants optional event then? Or?
Oh God, I wish. It would be so much better.
I'd suggest you wear pants.
It is pants are optional for the wrestlers.
Yes, of course.
Lucky bastards.
I wouldn't suggest you sitting in any chairs without pants on.
That's true. But it's pretty hot and smelly inside of American Legion Hall. And let's just say the bathrooms probably will not be cleaned between the days. And I don't know if you've been in a men's room after a wrestling show, but try being in a men's room after three. It's going to be absurdly gross on a number of levels, but it's also going to be a great time with one of the most fun to watch wrestling companies in the world. And I'm looking forward to this weekend a lot, even though I'm also slightly petrified about how I will feel about wrestling after Sunday night's show is over. So, Christy, is anything in wrestling making you happy ever?
Yes.
What?
Those little blow-up guys on the edges of the entrance
for Bayley? Oh, the wacky, waving, inflatable, flailing tube men?
They made me very happy.
They're the best, right? Oh, man. They're so cool.
That's how I like to dance.
Yes. I should also mention, because I mentioned theme music a lot in this segment, Bayley's theme music is making me happy this week.
Also the little nugget.
Oh, Izzy? Izzy's adorable.
Is her name Izzy, or did her you name's just name
Izzy.
Her?
No, her name is Izzy.
Yeah. She's adorable.
Bayley on her Instagram posted a letter that Izzy sent her. Yeah, it's really cute.
I'm
going
to have to follow Bayley on Instagram.
You are. Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
That's it.
Yeah.
She mostly posts great stuff, too.
Oh, good.
Yes. I think that'll do it for us this week. Thank you, Christy, for joining Jake and I on the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, which is my favorite name for a wrestling podcast, which is why we have it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jake, as always, and we'll talk to you guys next week.